Welcome, everyone, to episode 427 of the NBA podcast. We have finally arrived at the 2021 NBA playoffs. We are recording this on Friday, so we are still waiting for the results of the play-in game in the West. But otherwise, the playoff field is set. So we are going to go through today and preview every first-round matchup, talk about the key factors, give our predictions of how it's all going to play out. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a guy who I know is excited not to have to talk about the Chicago Bulls this time. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going well, Brian. It's full disclosure, it's almost 1 a.m. Over here on a very early Saturday. So if I sound a little bit tired, or if I make like a mistake in calling out the wrong name, you'll know why.
There we go. At least Bernie Lee isn't going to come for you like he just came for Shams Charania.
That was pretty spicy. My God,
I liked it. It seems befitting that Jimmy Butler's agent would come with that type of fire.
Ambulance chaser. Yeah, that killed me. That was fantastic.
And speaking of Jimmy Butler, Mort, we're just going to go preview these series in the order that they're going to be played. So we are starting 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, the first game on the playoff slate. Heat-Bucks, a rematch from last year's Eastern Conference semifinals. The Bucks were heavily favored in that series and just got walloped, lost in five games. Bring in Drew Holiday, bring in P.J. Tucker, made some big changes this offseason at the trade deadline, and we're right back to where we started, Mort. So if you're a Bucks fan, what gives you hope that this series is going to play out differently than the last one did?
Well, so there are a couple of reasons. I mean, it's easy just to say, oh, they have Drew Holiday this year. Mm-hmm. Like, that could be an easy cop-out, but there's more to it. I mean, we legitimately saw Coach Bud go through the regular season testing out new stuff. At the same time, I also think they have a better bench. I know that this has been a topic where people disagree, because a lot of people look at Bobby Portis and they go, oh, that's empty calories, the same with Bryn Forbes. And it's because we're seeing an NBA now where a lot of people are basically saying, well, if you can't defend and switch on to multiple positions, then you're just not good at anything, which I think is an inherently flawed way to look at things. I think if you can score the basketball, if you can rebound, if you can shoot especially, you know what? You will still have value. You can still swing a game. You can even swing a series in the right setting. So for the Bucks to have two guys coming off the bench who are supreme floor spacers and can really get in points, I think that lessens the burden on Giannis. I think it lessens the burden on Chris Middleton. I think it lessens the burden on Drew Holiday. And hell, look, we can even throw Brook Lopez into that category as well. It just means you can have a more spread out offense over the entire course of a game instead of just relying so much on Giannis to just go get it. You know what I mean? So those are the two major components. Having a guy like Drew Holiday and, in my opinion, having a better bench.
Yeah, I don't know that their bench is deeper than it was last season, but in the playoffs, depth doesn't necessarily matter unless you run into a ton of injuries, right? Like, your rotations shorten, and honestly, it could be beneficial that their depth is not as robust as it was last year, because then Bud might play Giannis for more than 30 minutes before game five of this series. So maybe the front office forced their hand. Like, I think Portis, Bryn Forbes, PJ Tucker, I feel good about those three. Pat Connaughton as well. I don't know. He's not going to average 23 minutes a game in this series like he did during the regular season, but right. I think he'll play spot minutes here or there. But after that, like, I'm not playing Jeff Teague in this match. I'm not messing around with Thanasis Antetokounmpo, with all due respect. Like, I'm sticking to an 8, at most 9-man rotation. and I'm actually playing my best players 36, 37, 38 minutes from the jump, because now I've seen what Miami can do, and I know that Miami really, you know, had a rough season, but rounded into form at the end here. Mm-hmm. We know they're a dangerous team, led by Jimmy, led by Bam, the same core that messed around and made it to the NBA Finals last year. So I think you said it well, you know, Bud has been experimenting throughout the regular season, shifting up defensive coverages as well. Like last year, it looked like that was the first time they have ever switched, was that series. And they just did not perform well. Like, they just didn't have the defensive chemistry they needed. They had that drop scheme that worked really well during the regular season. But when Miami's shooters got hot, you know, the Bucks didn't have a counterpunch. And I think that's another thing. If you're a Bucks fan, you can look at how Miami's shooters have been faring this season. They, you know, Duncan Robinson is still great, and you don't want to leave him alone, but he's shooting 41% this year instead of like 45, 46. Tyler Hero, same deal. Not as hot as he was last year. There's no guarantee that will hold. Maybe they see the Bucks again and say, oh, okay, cool. Now we're going to regress to our positive mean that we hit last year throughout the playoffs. But there's also a chance that that weird bubble environment with no fans in the stands created a shooter's gym. And maybe now that we have something close to normalcy, the Heat shooters are going to cool off a little bit, and that's going to play right in the Bucks' hands.
I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable take. And I think it's also a fair point, the whole bubble format. I don't think, you know, Heat fans listening into this shouldn't read your comment as, oh, they wouldn't have made the finals if it hadn't been for the bubble. But I do think it's absolutely fair to say that the bubble opened up for some shooting expansion in terms of efficiency, which may have led to certain teams getting some sort of benefit. Now, enough benefit to make it to the finals? No, I don't think so. I think they made it on their own merit. I think the Bucks just were not good in the entire bubble, even before they went into the playoffs. I mean, even in the final eight games, was it eight games they played? I think it was eight games. Yeah. In the regular season, like, they just looked a little bit discombobulated, and now we're seeing a different Bucks squad. And honestly, I'm not ruling out Miami by any stretch. We haven't talked about them a whole lot, in particular because they had a rough start. Jimmy was out for a while. I mean, he missed 20 games overall during the course of the season. So it was just such an up and down thing. But now that the pieces are all set, Jimmy is apparently, in his own words, what was it, stupidly locked in, which I really like. I'm not at that point where I at any point can rule them out, but I do have Milwaukee as my personal favorite going into this series. I think this is one of those situations where Giannis and Chris Middleton like looks back at the last couple of years and goes, no, not again. This is not going to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, Milwaukee actively worked their way into this series. They had a game against Miami that they could have just rested their starters and thrown, and Miami would have ended up in the 4-5 bracket instead and would have played Philly in the second round had they advanced. Milwaukee went full bore and beat the Heat in what would have been, you know, a must-win game for them seeding purpose-wise as well. So they wanted this matchup. Now it's time that they need, you know, it's time for them to prove that that wasn't foolish, or otherwise Mike Budenholzer is going to get a pink slip in 2 weeks.
So just in terms of that, right, going after a specific matchup, can I just say I really appreciate seeing a team just not care about certain things, just saying, you know what, we want that challenge? Because over the past couple of weeks, all we've heard about is, oh, this team needs to miss this team in the first round. And I understand that there's definitely a benefit in avoiding certain teams early on so you can make it further. You've been banging that drum, and I don't disagree with your analysis on that. Mm-hmm. But I do find it refreshing that there is, you know, at least a couple teams out there who just goes, nah, we don't care who we go up against. Let's kill all of those MFers. Like, let's just do it.
I'm of two minds here. One is, yes, I admire it, because you're not angering the basketball gods or whatever. But at the same time, like, they're, you know, you're just playing probability. Like, who would you rather face in the second round if you're the Sixers? Would you rather face the Heat or the Knicks or the Hawks? Like, you're just playing the odds of who do we think we have a better chance of beating and advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's the same deal with all these teams in the West that were trying to avoid the Lakers in the first or the second round. Like, do you really want to face the Lakers in the first round if you're Phoenix or Utah? Now, they didn't really, you know, it was more in the 3-6, 4-5 were where the real shenanigans were. But I don't blame teams for trying to avoid tough matchups. Like, the one danger I'll say is if you do somehow, you know, fall into what the Sixers have, basically, where it's like, this is Eastern Conference Finals or bust. And even right. if you make it there, you have to be careful not to read into it as fool's gold. Like, if the Nets or the Bucks advance, or even the Heat advance the Eastern Conference Finals and just boat race the Sixers, then you still have to take the view of, okay, we got this far, but are we actually as good as a right. team of that caliber should be? A team like in the Final Four should be, or did we just get lucky with the draw? So from the Bucks' perspective, I admire them not being scared. I hope it doesn't backfire on them. And that leads to the last question for this series, Mort, is what are the keys to a Heat upset for the second year in a row?
Jimmy Butler, I think, is one of the primary keys. I think, you know, you and I are really fond of the way Butler plays, because he's the type of guy who doesn't really goes out and says, well, I want 20 shots per game. I require 20 shots per game. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll be fully satisfied winning by 20 and him taking 3 shots. But I think that mentality has to change just a little bit coming into this particular series, because they are up against a defense that is really effective. And I think he needs to just basically own his own matchup. So if like Chris Middleton is on him for the vast majority of the time, he needs to go at Middleton every single time down the floor. And I'm not saying that Middleton isn't strong. Middleton is surprisingly strong physically, but Jimmy is in a different like league when it comes to raw pure physical strength. And I mean, if he can take him to the cup every single time down and get early fouls on Chris Middleton, take him out of the ball game, that would be absolutely huge. Now, to Middleton's credit, he's a great defender. He recognizes when he's in trouble, so he's got great communication skills. He'll call someone over, like, he'll come over a double, whatever. But I think Jimmy has to set the tone very, very early. He has to be aggressive. He has to get them off to a good start. If that means being a facilitator and racking up 7 assists in the first quarter, okay. But if it requires him, you know, scoring 16 points, then he has to go that route as well. He has to be that superstar that we know him to be, and he has to be even more of that, I think, early on.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Middleton shot 41.7% in the series against Miami last year, so you got to figure, you know, they know Giannis is going to eat, but slowing Middleton down to whatever extent they can will be huge. I think another thing, they're going to really miss Jay Crowder in the series. Not only the rugged mm-hmm. physical defense, but last year in this series, Jay Crowder shot 22 of 51 from 3. It was 43.1% on more than 10 three-point attempts per game. Yeah. So, you know, is Trevor Ariza going to be giving you that? Is Andre Iguodala going to be giving you that? Do you replace that with Hero and Robinson taking more threes, or Kendrick Nunn launching a higher volume from 3? All of it's possible, but, you know, I think especially with not having Victor Oladipo, he's out for the year with his quad injury. Yep. You traded Kelly Olynyk away to get Oladipo. I feel like they might be one big body short. You know,
yep.
Bielitsa, Dedmon might play spot minutes, but I don't see either one making a huge impact in this series. So what's your prediction for this, Mort? You said you were leaning Bucks, but Bucks in how many games?
Oh, you always ask me the how many games. That's the one I always hate, because, you know, it's so difficult to the intricacies of just a single NBA game. It has like what, a couple million action points, and so you have to like sort of calculate. Like, I just have to go on gut feeling, I guess, and I think it's the Bucks in 6.
That's what I'm going to. But like you, I would not be surprised if Miami pulls the upset. I just feel like Miami is a little worse this year than they were last year, and I think the Bucks are legitimately better this year
right.
than they were last year
right.
as well.
And just not having Oladipo, by the way, can we just comment on that's going to be the main narrative on Heat Twitter after the season? If they no, but I mean, if the Heat get bounced in the first round here, that's going to be a thing. like, they traded something to get Victor Oladipo in there. He played four games in the regular season. He's not going to play in the playoffs. He might even miss all of next year, apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, that is going to be a major topic amongst the fan base. Just, did we waste that chance? Did we just trade away something for nothing, and did that cost us a legitimate finals run?
Hey, Heat Twitter, here's a spoiler. A healthy Victor Oladipo isn't making the difference in this series.
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually do.
All right, so let's go to the next game on the slate. You got to be happy with the timing of this one. 4:30 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Mavericks Clippers. Luka Kawhi rematch from last year. This is a series that the Mavericks lost in six games to the Clippers. Required some absolute ridiculous shot making from Luka to even bring it to six games. So, you know, again, the teams have changed. Josh Richardson's in there for Dallas. You know, Montrezl Harrell's not there for the Clippers. Rajon Rondo, playoff Rondo's coming back at 4:30 tomorrow. So I guess the first question, Mort, is, you know, the Clippers have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to throw at Luka. Who would you task with the primary responsibility?
Paul George. Not because he's a better defender than Kawhi. I think Kawhi has the edge, but I think the length would just bother Luka a lot more. But you know what? We set that last year, and Luka put up a 43-point, 17-rebound, 13-assist game with a three-pointer at the buzzer. So you know what? I'm not necessarily going to say that that's going to sway him or sway the performance of Luka. Luka is just that dude. You know what I mean? It doesn't really matter who the hell you put on him. He'll find a way to still get up his 25-plus points, 8-plus assists, 8-plus rebounds. It's just a matter of, can you turn him in to an inefficient shooter? Like, can you force him into that Allen Iverson mentality where it takes him 28 shots to get 30 points?
Yeah. And now, I mean, I think another thing, if you reduce George's offensive responsibility and you're saying your main goal in this series is just to smother Luka as much as you can, we'll ride Kawhi offensively, you just focus on defense, that might help reduce some of the pressure on him, because he's going to come into the playoffs, fair or not, there is going to be the perception, as there, you know, has been hanging over him all season, of, sure, you play really well in the regular season, but playoff P turned into pandemic P pretty quickly. Maybe this just allows him to lock in, and then, you know, you still are going to need him as a secondary scorer, but he shot 35.8% in this series last year. You know, Kawhi was averaged almost 33 points on almost 54% shooting. So I think they have the blueprint, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't put Kawhi on Luka at any point. I think those two guys should split that duty.
Yeah.
But I do think it makes sense to make George be the primary defender there.
I don't think you would get a lot of luck by asking Paul George not to focus on the offense as well, because he is determined, in my opinion, to rid himself of the pandemic P handle that he unfairly got last year. So I think maybe that's actually something that's on the blackboard in Dallas, honestly. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Rick Carlisle and the entire coaching staff is very well aware that Paul George is going to be on a mission, and maybe they understand that could play into our hands a little bit. Maybe we can turn him a little bit shot hungry. Maybe we can turn him into one of those guys who just really wants it so badly that ultimately the rest of the teammates are being forgotten a little bit. Maybe that's the way forward. Here's the thing about defense and Luka as well. And this is going to be my final note on that. It's when you have a high IQ player who isn't reliant upon athleticism, who has great footwork both in the post, from the mid-range area, the step backs, all of that, does it really matter? Like, I'm really not kidding when I ask this. It's like, does it really matter if you put Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, or prime Scottie Pippen on him when he has that caliber of creativity, that caliber of footwork, that caliber of confidence? Because good Lord, is he a cocky Slovenian.
Yes.
I mean, I don't even think it matters all that much. He'll just still find a way. And he's smart enough to also to know, oh, if I don't have a shot, I'm not going to force it.
So I guess let's flip that question now, because the Mavericks have to worry about not only Kawhi, but also Paul George. So how do they slow those two guys down, barring, you know, Paul George just turning back into Pandemic P?
They pray?
Yeah, right. Like, personnel-wise, I mean, like you have Josh Richardson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Tim Hardaway Jr.
Not really optimistic about those options.
No. I guess you have to do Finney-Smith and Richardson against...
Yeah, and then you may have to funnel them towards the basket so Kristaps can challenge their shots near the rim. But you know what? Those two guys are so good that if Kawhi's going for a layup and Kristaps Porzingis is on the other end, you know what? I'm not putting the odds on Kristaps coming out on top in that thing. So, that's going to be a really tough one.
And both guys are such good mid-range shooters, too. That's the problem. Yeah. Like, Kristaps, if he doesn't have the mobility to keep up with them, if they're trying to play, like, drop coverage at any point with Kristaps near the basket, those guys will just wrap around screens and pull up from mid-range over and over again.
Can I give you a fun stat about that, actually?
Yeah.
So, looking at not just Paul George and Kawhi, also Nicholas Batum, actually.
Yes.
None of those three guys are shooting below 40% on any type of mid-range shot.
Yeah. That doesn't seem great for the Mavericks' chances here.
It doesn't. But yeah, and also, by the way, something that's kind of flown under the radar that I kind of want to point out. So Kawhi Leonard, we agree that he's a 6'7" small forward, or just a forward, really.
Yeah.
And we agree that he's not, you know, LeBron or Zion, just in terms of, like, he's strong, but he's not, you know, superhero strong.
Sure, yes.
77.5% within 3 feet of the basket.
That's also not great for the Mavericks' chances of advancing.
For the Mavericks, yeah.
And I mean, another thing I should say, working in the Clippers' favor here, is that they were the most accurate three-point shooting team during the regular season, knocking down 41.1% of their three-point attempts. So it's a lot for the Mavericks to have to deal with here. Do you have any hope of the Mavericks pulling off the upset?
I love Luka. I really do. And I think if there's a guy in the NBA right now who comes in as an underdog and who can pull off at least a couple wins just by doing it all by himself, I think it's Luka.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe also Steph Curry. But no, I would be very, very surprised if Dallas came out on top of this one. Also, you know, it's not just the matchup and the talent disparity. It's also the fact that the Clippers came in with championship aspirations last year. Mm-hmm. They didn't meet those expectations. Mm-hmm. And they have rolled through the damn league this year. And for some reason, we really haven't talked about them a whole lot, like in the national media. And we really should have, because they are fantastically good.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes down to the same reason the Bucks kind of flew under the radar this year. It's like,
yeah,
you saw they got so hyped last year and then just faded so hard in the playoffs that now it's the, like, you have to prove it for me to care. But they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference semifinals. Like, yes, they blew that lead, but they were also up in the second half of game 5. Like, they were not far away from advancing to the Western Conference Finals last year. So I understand the skepticism, but I think the Clippers are a better team this year. And I think the Mavericks, it's similar to Bucks Heat. Like, I think it's as easy as the Clippers are better than they were last year. The Mavericks are worse than they were last year. I don't see any reason that the result is going to change other than, yeah, I mean, maybe Luka just has 40-20-20 every game. I mean, that's...
Like, we're kidding about that, but,
that's the best hope, I think.
Yeah. No, but it's funny you mention it, because last year I had Milwaukee and Los Angeles going to the... The Clippers, of course, going to the finals. And I think you did too, right? I think we both agreed on that?
I honestly don't remember. I was very high on the Clippers last year. I think I had them as my champs.
Okay, yeah, I just had the Bucks and the Clippers going to the finals.
Yeah.
And this year, that seems to be, no, it's the Nets, and it's the Lakers, or, you know, the Jazz, or the Suns. I think, honestly, that it wouldn't surprise me at the very least if it's the Clippers and the Bucks this year, just a year too late.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. So, how many games?
Five.
Yeah, that's why I went with two.
Yeah, I mean, I would... There's a part of me that almost set four, but I just think Luka, he will just pull one out of his ass.
Yeah. The best sweep opportunity might be the next series. Celtics-Nets, and I'm looking on FanDuel Sportsbook here.
Wow, you're really down on the Nets, huh?
They don't have
odds. You Celtic lover.
Don't have odds for Sixers Wizards yet, or for Utah and whoever they face. But of the six playoff matchup set, the Nets have the highest odds by a mile. So Clippers Mavericks, the Clippers are -430, Mavs are +320. Nets Celtics, the Nets are a -1500. The Celtics are a +790. And I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to Jaylen Brown is not going to be in the series. If they had Jaylen Brown, I think at least personnel wise they had a chance to match up with Brooklyn's big three.
Without
Jaylen Brown, what do they do? Like, how do the Celtics keep up with these three guys?
I don't think they can. I mean, so obviously Kemba has played better recently. Mm-hmm. I know every time we talk about Kemba, we bring up the knee. Mm-hmm. And it's because I'm still concerned. I still think that there is some longevity issues there. But he has been better recently. But that's been offensively. Mm-hmm. Defensively, he's not been great. And I think Kyrie is just going to run him around in circles, honestly. He'll get whatever shot that he wants. Then you could argue that Tatum's defense is good enough to affect opposing superstars like James Harden and Kevin Durant. But how much? You know, because he's also going to be asked to put up like damn near 40 every game for them to be competitive from an offensive perspective. So, no, I don't really see that there's an avenue here where they can do a whole lot of damage. Like, Robert Williams could be a fun key to the whole thing just by swatting away shots on the interior. But at the same time, much like my former Kawhi versus Kristaps scenario, if I have Robert Williams guarding the basket and if I have Kevin Durant going to the basket, I'm not going to pick Robert Williams to win that matchup. So I think the shot making is one thing, but just the offensive versatility in Brooklyn, also Joe Harris coming in and getting buckets. Alize Johnson could come in off the bench and along with Blake Griffin and play bully ball. The Celtics don't really have a whole lot of size. So yeah, this looks like a pretty clear-cut series. And I agree with you, if Jaylen had played, it would have been a completely different matchup.
Yeah, because then you could still have Tatum, Smart, and Brown to throw at the big three. Your Kemba fear defensively is legitimate. And I saw Nikias Duncan in Basketball News identify that as one of the big X factors in the series. Just where do you hide Kemba? Because I don't think you can put him on Kyrie. You're right. Kyrie will just run circles around him, but you can't hide him on Harden. You can't hide him on Durant. If you put him on Joe Harris is just going to run through a million screens and then launch open threes. So does Kemba get played off the floor? That sounds like an insane thing to say, but I mean, if the Nets are smart, they're going to target him every single time defensively.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, remember a couple weeks ago when I said I think it would behoove the Celtics to get out of Kemba's contract this summer, if he has a really, really poor series defensively, like where he got targeted and just played off the floor, that could be really bad news for the Celtics' chances to get off of that contract as well.
Yeah, and I think this is a point that we're going to just keep referencing throughout all of these things. Like, the quality of the team matters, but at the same time, especially in later rounds, I think it'll be more of an issue than this early round, with one or two possible exceptions. Like, matchups really matter. Individual matchups really matter here. So like, seeding, yes, I mean, if a team was, you know, like, I don't think I'm going to pick a 1-8 upset, but, like, right, if a team just does not match up well with another team, then there's nothing you can really do at a certain point. Like, you're not going to completely overhaul your roster. You can't really overhaul your rotations to that extent. So this is one of those series where I just don't see an avenue for Boston. Like, Tatum has been phenomenal. It drops 50 points in the play-in game against the Wizards. And, like, it's similar to the Mavericks-Clippers series. Maybe Tatum goes off, averages 40 points a game. But even if he does, I don't know if that's enough.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. By the way, it's a travesty that that 50-pointer is not being counted anywhere.
I know. It's such a weird thing.
They have to figure that out for next season, right?
I hope so. Yeah, like, yeah, it should go down in the record book somehow.
Could you imagine if you one day, like, went up against, like, Michael, Kobe, and Wilt's records for most 50-point games? And then maybe he came one shy, and then he had that one, and just like, what? Come on!
He'll have his, like, final game will just be him launching every single shot just to get that 50-pointer pack. Yeah.
It's like, let me just beat you to the punch. This is a sweep, I think, unfortunately. That's not me being down on the Celtics. I know you are chuckling inside, you devilish Sixers fan, but I mean, I'm really saddened for the Celtics here, because I don't think they deserve this. I think they had such a weird season, and some people are saying, well, they didn't play up to par all year long, so they don't deserve any better. But you know what? Evan Fournier alone, just him overcoming COVID in the way that he did, Jason Tatum overcoming COVID and, like, having to play or having to use an inhaler before games now. Yeah. You know what? Like, Kemba's knee. Yeah, I think they scrapped together a reasonable season overall, and for them to then lose Jalen that late and having to go through this, I mean, that's rough, man. That is really rough. So I hope that we get a couple wins from them in this series. I don't think we will, but I would love it if they could pull out one or two. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I went Nets in five just because I could see Nets sleepwalking through, especially if they're up 3-0 in game four. I could see them sleepwalking through that game and just come home and destroy them. But
yeah, well, I will say this. Have we seen Kevin Durant in the playoffs since, you know, him playing for the Golden State Warriors sleepwalk? Of course we haven't, because this would be his first playoff game since the injury, but I mean, he changed after he became a champion. Like, there was no more sleepwalking.
Yeah.
He was on, like, every single play. And I wonder if that's a quality that he has maintained because of those championships now. I don't know, but it's worth looking over.
Yeah, and again, like, even if they do, they still just might have too much firepower for Boston to keep up with. So I was generous. This was my olive branch to Celtics fans, giving you one game against this Nets team that is otherwise going to stomp you into the ground.
Yeah. I think Celtics fans would take it, honestly.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right, let's get to one of the best series of the first round, the nightcap on Saturday, Trailblazers Nuggets.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Jamal Murray's injury does change the complexion of this series, especially for a Nuggets team coming off a trip to the Western Conference Finals. We thought after they acquired Aaron Gordon, this looked like a legit title contender. I don't think we can make that argument anymore. But I think this is going to be a pretty evenly matched series. The odds makers agree. Blazers are a -115, Nuggets are a -105. So that's about as even as it could possibly get. For Portland, You're going against Jokic, the very, very likely MVP of the season. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Blazers have the right personnel in the front court to, you know, they're not going to stop Jokic, but could they at least make his life difficult?
No.
Ooh, okay.
No, so I love Yusuf Nurkic. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love Yusuf Nurkic. I think defensively he's taken great, great strides against traditional or somewhat newish bigs.
Mm-hmm.
But Jokic is more than just newish big. He is a transcendent talent that we've never seen before. What he can do from the perimeter, what he can do from a passing perspective, like, you can't stop his passes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and he is not one of those guys who wants to go out and average 35. So if you have someone like Nurkic overplaying Jokic just to stop him from scoring, you might actually be playing right into his hands. Because then he'll position himself, Jokic, of course, somewhere on the court. Nurkic would be right up on him, and he'll just drop some sort of behind-the-back pass, over the shoulder, whatever, to a cutter. So, mm-hmm. No, I don't think there's an avenue there where you can stop Nikola Jokic. No. And I say that as a Yusuf Nurkic fan. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I do think Jokic is going to have to play upwards of 40 minutes per game in the series, because the options behind him are basically Paul Millsap, JaVale McGee, or go small. None of those excite me against Enes Kanter, who defensively is going to struggle, but he's right. Going to clean up on the glass. He is a legit offensive threat as well. So I think Jokic, if the Nuggets do advance in this series, Jokic is going to be the Jimmy Butler meme of him hanging over the side rail. Because he's going to be pretty beat after this one,
but I'm not really too concerned about that, to be honest with you. Because again, like, he's going to have minutes against Enes Kanter. I don't mm-hmm. think, because if he plays 40 minutes, I don't think Terry Stotts is going to throw out Yusuf Nurkic for 40 minutes.
No, I don't think.
He's got the durability for that. So I think Jokic in his mind is going to go, oh, Enes is on me. That now's when I score.
Yeah. right. Now I got 20 minutes of reprieve. Before Nurkic comes back in and starts laying the wood again.
Exactly.
From the Nuggets' perspective, Mort, how do you stop not only Dame and CJ, but also Norman Powell?
Oh, so, yeah, you probably don't have a whole lot at your disposal from a defensive perspective. Here's the thing about Monte Morris. I think he's a fine defender for his size, but he's also a slight guy. I mean, he's like 6'3", and let me just look it up so I don't... I want to say something somewhere around like 180. Close enough, 183. And you know, Dame, especially, is really strong. I mean, We talked about physical strength before. He's also one of those guys who can absorb a lot of contact, and he goes up against bigs all the time. And frequently wins those matchups. So I don't think from a physical standpoint that Morris can really slow him down. Like, he'll shadow him fine, but if Dame wants to establish himself against Morris, he can. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a pretty crucial point to, like, bring up. So I you know, do they have a really tough defensive guard? Shaq Harrison, I guess? But no, is he still there?
Is this Facundo Campazzo erasure here?
No, he's not.
No. Well, I mean, Will Barton, I think, if he comes back and is healthy, will be a big key in this series. But, yeah, I mean...
Oh, he can't stop Dame, though.
Right, and I think otherwise, like, Aaron Gordon might be your best option on one of those guys.
God. That's weird. So actually, Shaquille Harrison is there. He signed two-way. I wasn't sure if he got waived or not. So he should be on their playoff roster, right?
Yeah, if two ways. Yeah, two ways are allowed this year to play in the playoffs.
In that case, that might be their best bet defensively.
Oh boy, yeah. I saw a quote. I forget who. I think Ryan Blackburn of Denver Stiffs, if I'm not mistaken, relayed a quote from one of the Nuggets guys who was just like, yep, we know Dame's going to score. We just got to do our best. It's like, okay, well, at least mm-hmm. we're going in with the right mindset. How much are the Nuggets going to miss Jamal Murray in this series, especially given how good he's been in the playoffs the last 2 years?
Oh, I mean, that goes without saying. Tremendous loss, unfortunately. They are going to miss his shot making, but more so than that is the gravity as well from the outside. Like, now you can shrink the court a little bit when he's not there, and that concerns me. Also, you couldn't really put Jamal Murray on the line. He was that good of a free throw shooter, so that's another aspect that you kind of take away from there. Obviously, the 41% from three, the 21 plus points. You have to find ways to produce efficient offense that doesn't come from him. And I just, when I look at that roster, I mean, sure, you can go Jokic, you can go extended minutes for Michael Porter Jr., but then you run into the question, if you significantly increase the offensive volume of Michael Porter Jr., does his efficiency go down? Does it maintain its same, its current level of efficiency? What about Will Barton? If you increase that, does that follow along? Like, those are the big issues. I really don't know how they're going to make up for that. One guy I'm looking at to do more from an offensive perspective is Aaron Gordon. I don't think he can get away with taking 8 shots per game in the playoffs. I think they need him to be way more involved in the offense. I really do. I think more minutes potentially for PJ Dozier as well. Just getting buckets here and there. He may not average 20, but if he can come in a playoff series and give them 12 quality points per game, that's a boost. But no, they are definitely missing something. By the way, I have this idea. I want to run it by you. So you know how Dame, you can almost try to fight fire with fire a little bit. Like, if you had someone who was really quick and who get up a lot of shots, you would force Dame into playing a lot of defense, right? Would it make sense to put Marcus Howard in there and just let him eat offensively? Just try to really get him involved in the offense early and often. I know he's super small, but I'm wondering. He finished the season on a high note. You got to give me that.
I think if you're going to feed touches to someone, I'd probably try the MVP first, and then I would try Michael Porter Jr. second.
But I'm talking about a guard that where you force Dame into just running around with him, tiring him out a little bit.
I feel like Austin Rivers will probably be that person more than...
I guess. I don't know. Here's the thing. You got to give me this. Marcus Howard is a great offensive player. I mean, we saw that over the past 2 years at Marquette as well. Actually, over the past 3 years at Marquette. Like, he can create his own shot on a consistent level. He can shoot the three. He is a guy who can get up shots. And I'm not saying that he's the answer, but I am saying if you can get him into games and you can have him produce offensively, you are forcing either Dame or CJ to chase him around. Maybe they tire out a little bit more.
He played meaningful minutes in, like, 4 games all year. 4 games. I just can't imagine.
I know. And look, but hey, we have seen crazier stuff in the playoffs before.
I guess so. So this is the one of the hardest series for me to pick, but who are you going with?
Can I just say it ends in 6 and then...
You're not sure who wins?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Yeah. I think they played one of the greatest second round series a few years ago. So I just want to see that again. And frankly, from a fan perspective and just in competitive level perspective, like, not having Jamal Murray in there is going to make that series, like, more equal, I think, is probably the right term.
Yeah.
So can I just say I hope for a game 7? Is that okay? That's fair. Good. Yeah. That's what I hope for.
I think if Jamal Murray was in, I'd pretty confidently pick the Nuggets.
Yes.
Without Jamal Murray, I'm leaning Portland, but I don't feel especially great about it. So I'm going Blazers in 6. But I fully understand that Jokic and Porter in particular could make that look very stupid in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's tough for me. Like, 6, I'm not going to... I would be surprised if it was that type of dominance for Portland.
Anytime I pick 6 for a lower-seeded team, it's just because I see them closing it out at home. Like, I struggle to see a team on the road going in game seven and winning more often than not.
Right.
So
it's possible.
Yeah. Oh, no, it definitely is. And I hope we get a game seven as well. Like, I think this will be a super fun and entertaining series. I mean, it's, you know, you're talking fight fire with fire here. Like, the Blazers have one of the worst defenses in the NBA this year. So this might just be a track race. Like, it might be two teams just first to 140 wins.
Yeah.
So
that should really be the rule of that.
Yeah.
Series, honestly.
All right, so let's go. That is the first day's slate of games. We start with a barn burner on Sunday. Sixers-Wizards, Mort. The Wizards clinched their spot in the playoffs just by boat racing the Indiana Pacers on Thursday night. Very excited to say bye, Felicia, to them at some point, because, my God, their season could not have ended soon enough. I wrote a preview for this series today at Forbes Sports. I think three keys. One, more, Bradley Beal is very much not 100%.
Yeah.
But how do the Sixers slow him down even more than his hamstring is already slowing him down?
Matisse Thybulle? But, I mean, so obviously most would point to Ben Simmons, I think, initially, and sure. But you would have to rotate great defensive players onto him at all times. So that's probably Ben and Matisse. And then if push comes to shove, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple Tyrese Maxey minutes. Not because Maxey is the greatest defender, but he's a guy who hustles. He's quick. He'll pick up guys a little bit earlier than others. So I think he could really stick with Beal. And he'll make some mental lapses, I think. But you know what? He's a rookie. It's fine. Just compete. I think the key for Philly here is just get the ball into the hands of Russell Westbrook as much as possible, because then you force him to take... No, but here's the thing. I think Russ ended the year on a really high note. I don't think they would have been in the playoffs without him. He started playing better. He played a lot better. What I mean by putting the ball in his hands as much as possible is also to tire him out. Like, if you can just force him to have tremendous volume over the first three quarters, and you have Beal nursing a hamstring, then the fourth quarter is yours.
Yeah.
And you can pretty much go to work.
Well, and you never know. I mean, we saw bad Russ come out on Tuesday. As good as Russ had been throughout the final months of the season, we saw, you know, it's always that balance of good Russ and bad Russ. And sometimes you see both in the same game. But I completely agree with you. They should be trying to get the ball out of Beal's hands into Westbrook's hands as much as possible. If you get him to, if you like goad him into those mid-range pull-ups or those transition three-point attempts that he has no business taking, or he throws away, you know, he's averaging almost five turnovers a game, so he's going to throw the ball away a lot. The Sixers are really good in transition, and they have, you know, Ben, Danny Green, Thybulle especially, who are going to wreak havoc and push the pace when they get those steals. So yeah, I think trying to limit Beal's touches as much as possible is the obvious strategy. I will say, you know, Simmons, you're right. If you're thinking, okay, this guy's a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year, he is the obvious candidate to go up against Beal. He really didn't spend a ton of time on Beal during the regular season. And I don't know if that was just preserving it for a possible playoff matchup, and you can have it as a card to play if you need to, but it was mostly Danny Green in the first game. Thybulle didn't really play at all that first game. The 60-pointer from Beal, it was Danny Green and Thybulle splitting duties. Danny struggled a bit. Thybulle was much better. Third game, Simmons didn't play. Thybulle started. And that was the game the Sixers just annihilated the Wizards. So I'm curious to see how quickly Doc turns to Thybulle. Like, I'm guessing he's going to not mirror Beal's minutes, but I think he's going to, of all the subs, he's going to play the most.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me whatsoever.
And
of course, for Philly, because I know where you're going here.
Yeah, well, for Washington, really, defensively.
Yeah, but like really at the big spots. I know that Washington fans are all up about Daniel Gafford's impressive run since the trade. That's nice.
Yeah, it ends here.
It ends here, because, look, Joel Embiid against Robin Lopez and Daniel Gafford.
And Alex Len. Don't forget Alex Len.
yeah, I don't really much care.
yeah, it's 18 fouls.
It's 18. That's really how we have to look at it. No, I would be surprised if Embiid isn't the clear-cut MVP of this series.
Yeah. Yes.
Like he should come in and average like a point per minute.
Yeah.
Almost and like finish the series like with a true shooting percentage in the mid to high 60s. I mean, I would be a little bit disappointed if he didn't, because this is free cheese. All the way through. The ball has to go through him. He has to make everyone else pay. Robin, I actually really like Robin Lopez, and I think defensively he's actually become a little bit underrated. I think age and his funkiness and his behavior and whatnot has sort of underrated him as a defender. But look, this is Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Like I don't care. You can't stop him. You really can't. He'll get you in foul trouble immediately. So as soon as Robin Lopez is out of the way, yeah, you could argue Alex Len has great size, but defensively he's not as sturdy or as consistent as Lopez, so that's going to be an issue. And then Gafford is still superbly inexperienced. Mm-hmm. Like he will go for blocks all the time. He will foul. He will be a very impatient. So, yeah, this series has Embiid written all over it.
Yeah, this is what I was alluding to earlier with regard to like specific matchups, because the Sixers just have the personnel between Simmons, Green, and Thybul to match up pretty well defensively against the Beal-Westbrook backcourt. The Wizards not only have no great answer for Embiid, but who's guarding Tobias Harris? Who's guarding Ben Simmons? Like, they don't have great answers for any of Philly's top three.
Oh, I know who guards Ben Simmons. The three-point line.
Yeah, there you go. All right. All right, prediction for this series.
I don't have a broom next to me, but you catch my drift.
Yeah, I mean, I went Sixers in five because I'm just... It's similar to the Nets-Celtics thing where I could see one game where Beal last gasp goes off for 45. But again, I mean, he went for
hamstring, 60, though.
And he went for 60 and they still lost. So, you know, I hope it's a sweep. Right? Like, the Sixers should sweep this, but I don't know that they will.
The thing is, for me, it's the hamstring issue for Beal. He just hasn't looked right.
Yeah.
If he was looking right, I probably would have said five, maybe even six. But he looked so, so bad to end the season.
Yeah.
Like, I just question whether he's right. If he's right, like, who knows? Like, it's a couple days off. Maybe it's enough. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. So yeah. And maybe he comes back and he's fully healthy.
The schedule works in his favor because they play Sunday, then Wednesday, then Saturday. So they have 2 days of rest between games one and two and two and three. But after that, it's every other game. So
I wonder if would that behoove the Wizards to sit him in game one then?
I mean, Beal... You know, there was an interview with David Aldridge where he said, like, I don't even know if a week off would heal me at this point. Like, it sounds like he needs extended time off. Like, I don't think we're getting anything close to 100% Bradley Beal in this series, which sucks for the Wizards.
But it really does. It really does. And I don't think Russ can triple-double his way out of this one.
No, nor do I. All right, let's go to... Oh boy, one of the most exciting series of the first round. Lakers-Suns. We believe Lakers. The seventh seed, we believe Lakers, who are a -168 favorite over the two seed Phoenix Suns, Mort. At this point, LeBron is going to come in with an eye patch, hobbling. I think for the Suns defensively, I'm less concerned with what they do against LeBron, because they do have Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder to throw at him. Not that either of those guys will totally shut him down, but maybe with the eye patch, he could at least slow down. I have no idea how the Suns slow down Anthony Davis. Do you?
Well, no. What about Torrey Craig, by the way? You forgot to mention him.
To throw at LeBron?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think like the Suns have good wing defenders. That is not my primary concern for them. It is what in
the big
God's name do you do against AD?
Aiden.
I
I think it has to be 8.
But then what if the Lakers stay big at first and have Drummond out there with AD?
Oh, man. Yeah, so I still think then you just stick Aiden with AD, and then you gamble statistically because Drummond near the basket is not good. despite being the one of the biggest human beings on Earth, he's not good around the basket. So I would take my chances, and if I can somehow, some way, use Aiden to neutralize AD, which, let's be honest, that's not going to happen. He can have an effect, sure, but he's not going to somehow prevent him from being effective in this series. I would just take my chances. Like, who do I then guard Drummond with if I do that matchup? Like, right. Jay Crowder?
Yeah, that's where it gets hairy quickly.
No, I don't mind. I that's okay with me. I'll take that odd. I'll take those odds.
Or do you put Crowder on AD instead?
No. No, you need the length. I really wouldn't. I mean, of course, after pick and rolls and people switch and whatnot, I mean, AD will have mismatches regardless. But no, I would make a concerted effort in getting Aiden to spend 80% of his time on AD. I really would.
Yeah.
And the improvement defensively, the rebounding, I don't know.
And we saw it really in the play-in game on Tuesday, where the Warriors' small ball looks really gave the Lakers' big ball looks some trouble. And the Suns have some small ball options. Like, you can...
They have plenty!
Yeah. So I think one of the stylistic things to watch in this series is who imposes their will on who. So can the Lakers go double big because Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center, at least doesn't want to play center until the later rounds? Can they make them pay with AD at the 4, Drummond at the 5? Or if the Suns downsize, do they force the Lakers' hand, make AD go at the 5, and then it's much easier to keep Ayton on him in that, because then you're not worried about, oh, well, who's guarding Drummond? Or who's guarding Marc Gasol? Or who's guarding Montrezl Harrell?
Yeah, I could see something like that working out. The thing for me is the Lakers defensively, especially at the guard spots. What do you do there? Like, Dennis Schroeder is not a strong defender. He's also a very slight player. So Chris can pretty much get to his spot whenever. Also, Chris knows him very well from having played with him last year. Mm-hmm. So, and Chris is an incredibly smart player. Dennis Schroeder is not. So I think there is a pretty wide gap there just in terms of him understanding, oh, I know what Dennis likes.
Right.
I know his tendencies. I'm going to make him just completely bow down to my presence.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Booker, of course, I don't know. Who do you put KCP on? Booker?
Or LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes more sense. But also, here's the thing, though. If you put LeBron on Devin, that's a lot to ask for LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah, especially on a bad
angle. He will run him around. Yeah, he will run him around. Like, if they see that matchup, Monty Williams immediately would, like, just go with his finger up. Yeah. Like, Devin, run.
right.
Run as much as you can for the next couple of possessions when he's guarding your ass. Just run.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know. This is, regardless, the outcome of this series is going to just have crazy reaction around the NBA atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating matchup because neither team seems to match up well against one another. Like, to your point about the Lakers' backcourt, yeah, you have KCP. I think Alex Caruso is probably going to end up playing
a huge role in the series. Yeah,
because I think you could reasonably ask him to take one of those guys. And yeah, maybe you put LeBron on Mikal Bridges to just avoid him having to assume too much responsibility defensively, but they don't have great answers here, so I think it really does come down to who imposes their style on who. And I don't know, man. I know the Warriors are a uniquely bad matchup for the Lakers, but watching that game on Tuesday was a bit alarming. And just, I mean, the state of the Lakers really over the second half of the season. Like, I don't think LeBron James or Anthony Davis are 100% healthy at this point. So
agreed.
If this were a full-strength Lakers team, I mean, they entered the season as one of the presumptive title favorites and only added Andre Drummond. Like, they only added talent. But I don't know. With not fully healthy LeBron, not fully healthy AD, I'm a little nervous. So which side are you leaning in this one?
Well, before I say that, just one question. Do you think Talen Horton-Tucker is ready to take on, like, a defensive role of Devin Booker for, like, an extended period of time?
He might have to be. Or, I mean, you have Wes Matthews as well. Like, they have options. I just don't love any of them.
Wes Matthews is 75 years old, though.
Only 34, 35?
Oh, God, he's younger than me. What did I just
refer? There you go.
Oh,
he's only 34.
I just owned myself. No, but I hear you. I hear you. But, yeah, I think Horton Tucker could be a good wild card. Or maybe.
Yeah.
You know what? It's actually unfair. I'm going to – that's unfair to call him a wild card. I think he played well enough this year to at least talk about him in the sense that he's not this unknown commodity. He absolutely is at this point. 20 minutes per game, 9-plus points, a positive feature on defense for someone who's 20 years old. I think for me it's because I look at that age and I just go, oh, can he really be, you know, a difference maker? But, yeah, I think he can. Like, can he shut down Devin Booker? No, of course not. But if he can affect him, and like we talked about earlier with Luka, like, if you can force Devin Booker into becoming an inefficient shooter, that's a pretty substantial advantage you can have there. But to answer your question, and I'm going to completely cop out of this one, I don't know. Can I just go for a game 7 once again and just not answer that question?
No, you only get one coward move.
Damn it.
Per podcast, so you already wasted
it. Damn it.
Okay. This would be my opt-out, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I think I spent my opt-out really poorly.
I'm not going to opt-out, but this would be, if I had to pick one, this would be the one I opt-out on.
Oh, man. Like, there's a part of me that thinks Phoenix, but at the same time, I mean, it's still LeBron, and on the bum angle, it's almost like the narrative is working in his favor.
I know. Oh, he's right? He's building it up too.
Yeah,
he is building this thing for every. I got poked to the eye, and I saw 3 baskets, so I just shot at the middle one. Shut up, LeBron! Like, I'm a LeBron defender, but like, we get it. Just shut up. Just play basketball.
But that's really what it comes down to, right? Like, is this the LeBron takes over kind of thing?
Yeah.
You know what? I've doubted him so many times before, and a couple years ago, I realized, just don't.
Right, especially in the playoff. But I don't think we've seen him this unhealthy going into the playoffs.
We haven't. Ever. We haven't. But you know what? You and I decided that we're going to stop underrating him, and then I made the effort or the mistake last season in the bubble. I said, okay, now's the time because it's the bubble. It's a weird mentality. Like, it's a weird thing. It's Blazers, I said in the first round. You remember? And then they won the first game, and I could take my premature victory lap there, and that was it. And it's because I keep thinking, now it's time. He's too old. Mm-hmm. Like, the body can't keep. I just don't want to look dumb again. So because of that, I'm going to go Lakers, but you know, I don't feel good about it.
I know. My brain is saying Lakers, but my heart is saying Suns. That's really where I'm at.
I don't have a horse in this one at all.
No, I don't.
I'm just going to enjoy seeing whatever fan base has a full-on meltdown after the series.
Well, I will say this. If the Suns lose this series, I don't think their fans should have a meltdown. They had an incredible season. They have a lot to build on. And it's just supremely unlucky that as the 2 seed, you get the defending champions in the first round. So,
oh, I agree. But we have met Suns fans. Suns fans have been in our mentions a lot. And I think it's fairly reasonable to say that logic and expectations aren't really, for Suns fans' perspective, don't really align a whole lot. So I would hope that you're right. that they just see, oh, you know what, bad draw. That's no, that's just the way it works. Tough luck next year, whatever. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm going Lakers in six, but I really want to go Suns in seven. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you.
All right, so let's go next to Hawks Knicks. This is another one of the most divisive series in terms of odds. Hawks are a -115, Knicks are a -105 at the FanDuel Sportsbook. So much like Portland Denver, this is basically a pick 'em. Mort, how do the Hawks slow down Julius Randle?
So what is the status of DeAndre Hunter?
He is playing.
Yeah.
He came back at the very end of the regular season, so he is healthy. I don't know if he's playing 38 minutes in game one, but he is available.
Yeah, but wasn't there something when he came back? I'm just looking over his game log. It was something about him not playing a whole lot of minutes initially. Oh, he actually started the last game. I didn't even realize that until now. Played 24 minutes. Okay. And that was on the 16th. Oh, so he's had almost a week off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think that improves their odds. Let me just put it that way.
Yes.
I don't think you can fully stop Julius Randle, but I think it's a world of difference whether you put someone like DeAndre Hunter on him or someone else. DeAndre Hunter, to me, is their best perimeter defender at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's also a guy who can swing up to larger positions and really fight out the position, so to speak. Like, unlike John Collins, who's more of a shadowy defender, Hunter is more in your face. He's more aggressive. So I think that would be the answer going forward. But he's not gonna completely shut down Julius Randle. Julius Randle is too good for that. But he can make those very off-balance mid-range jump shots a little bit more difficult, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think in general people are sleeping on the Hawks going into this series. And, you know, I follow, like, everyone saying the Sixers have a cakewalk to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I think if the Hawks advance, I don't necessarily think that's true.
Right.
But, and it's a large part because of Hunter, who was phenomenal in the first part of the series before, or the first part of the season before he got hurt. He averaged almost 18 points a game on almost 52% shooting. Like, this kid took a major leap and then just missed most of the season, so it kind of fell under the radar. But yeah, I mean, I think they have the personnel between Hunter. I know Collins is not a defensive stalwart, but like between Hunter, Collins, Capella, even Onyeka Okongwu, like they've got some bodies to throw at Julius Randle. So I'll flip it for the Knicks, who, you know, God bless Tom Thibodeau. Naturally, he comes in and the Knicks have the fourth best defense in the league. So who do they throw to slow down Trae Young?
Trae Young. Frankie Smokes is my guess.
Mm.
Because it's not just the size, right? It's also the length.
Yeah.
And like, when you have a long-armed 6'5 point guard who is, I think it's fair to say, better defensively than he is offensively.
Oh, my God.
You just have to use him on the right guy, and that has to be Trae Young. I mean, now we can talk about a guy where you ask, we don't want a single point out of you. We don't, or rather, if you give us two, that's a bonus, but we don't care if you scoreless. We want you to just shut this guy down, and you can't shut down Trae Young, I'm fully aware, but I mean, so what is Frankie? Is he 6'4", 6'5"? Okay, he's Basketball Reference says 6'4", yeah. But a long wingspan, quick feet. Like, that's their best bet, I think.
Yeah.
Is it good enough? No.
Well, my question is, does Tibbs, as he has stubbornly done throughout the season, stick with Elfrid Payton in the starting lineup?
Yeah,
because then you're probably, I mean, I guess you could put RJ Barrett on Trae Young, but where are you putting Payton? Like, does Payton have any chance of sticking with Trae Young, or is Trae Young just going to light him up?
So Payton is actually a sneaky good defender, and he also came into the league with that reputation. I think he's been a little bit maligned because he became sort of a journeyman. He didn't really live up to expectations in Orlando. Now, he's a solid defender, but he's not someone who's an overpoweringly great defender. So Trey would definitely win that matchup. But no, you can sort of expect Payton to produce at a certain level when he's on the court, right? He's going to give you some playmaking. He's going to give you some rebounding. He's going to give you some scoring, at least from driving to the basket. And then there's the defensive aspect. Do you want that, or do you want someone who's a specialty player like Frankie Smokes instead? I don't know. I think Tibbs is going to stick with Elfrid Payton. I mean, I follow Tibbs very closely in Chicago. I think I know that he's not someone who would start a guy over the course of a full regular season and then in the playoffs, oh, let me make a change. That's not how he works. That's not how he operates. Mm-hmm. He's sticking with what he knows, and then he's going off of there. Maybe he adjusts a couple minutes here and there, but he's a guy who likes to keep things the way that he's used to it. So it's probably going to be Payton initially, and I don't think over the course of a 7-game series that that's the right call if you're really trying to stick it to Trae Young. I think you need Frankie Smokes. I that has to be your best option at this point.
Yeah,
RJ is too big, I think.
Yeah, because it's not like Trey, his entire game is not just getting to the basket, because like you have Nerlens Noel lurking there. He's going to be guarding the basket, and he's an amazing shot blocker, you know, very disruptive. So that aspect of the game, even if Payton does get blown by, Nerlens can help clean up some of those mistakes. But Trey has a great floater game, and Trey also, Lord knows, he likes taking those pull-up threes as well. So he's a three-level scorer, and Nerlens is only going to raise one of those three levels.
Yeah,
which makes me, it's certainly something to keep an eye on, how, you know, whether it's Payton, Frankie, whoever Tibbs assigns to Trae Young in this series. And I think ultimately that's what this series comes down to. You know, the Knicks had the number 4 ranked defense. The Hawks had the 9th ranked offense in the league. The Hawks have a ton of firepower between Young, Collins, Bogdanovich, Danilo Gallinari. So which one wins out? It's similar to the Lakers Suns in that regard. Like, who wins out stylistically in this series?
Stylistically? Oh. It's a good question. I don't think I have a good answer for you, honestly, because these just have... It's so different, both styles, like you brought up. So I don't think there's one team that has a specific style overall that wins. I think, obviously, the Knicks have a better stylistic presence in it, and also impact defensively. And I think the Hawks, in terms of their shot profile offensively, ranks out better in that regard. I don't know. This is really an offense versus defense sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's polar opposites. So I can't really answer that question. What I can say is I think great offense will always beat great defense. And if the Hawks can deliver to that, then I think we just got to give it to them in that case. But do they have that? Is Trae Young a good enough offensive player over the course of a 7-game series just to go, I got this?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't bet against it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's another storyline for the series, is really neither one of these teams, their main pieces, have a ton of playoff experience. So it's not like, you know, one team is going in with this veteran leadership that's been to, you know, I guess Rose and Taj on the Knicks have, but the like Randall, Barrett, Nerlens is going to be their first real taste of the postseason. I know Nerlens played a little bit with OKC, but you know, not substantially. And then Trey, Collins, like all of these guys are just so fresh that it'll be interesting to see, especially as we get later and later in the series and the pressure ratchets up if one team falls into a 3-1 hole, how that affects things. But who is your pick in this series, Mort?
I'm probably going Hawks in 7.
Okay.
But here's the thing. I hate going with a winner when we're talking about Game 7s.
Yeah.
I really do. I think Game 7s are toss-ups. So can I just say Game 7 and then whoever takes that?
No, you already used your opt-out.
All right. Hawks fair enough. Seven. I think for Hawks in seven, but it's close. Let me just put it that way.
Okay, that's fair. So I'm either way, like, I compared to a lot of the other predictions I've seen, I'm either much higher on the Hawks than consensus or much lower on the Knicks. I'm not saying it's going to be an easy series for the Hawks, but I do have the Hawks advancing in six games.
Well, it's just one game less than mine.
So. I know, but I don't know. Maybe I'm looking ahead to a potential Hawks-Sixers series where everyone seems to think the Sixers are just going to waltz into the ECF, and I think the Hawks especially, I think if it's Sixers-Knicks in the second round, the Sixers are going to waltz in the Eastern Conference Finals because I think, again, matchup-wise, really bad for the Knicks.
Yeah,
I think the Hawks have some very bad matchup problems for the Sixers.
Yeah, and for the Knicks too. Yeah. So, I think it also just matters is how many guys are healthy, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's also one of the things that I would look at, because these Hawks have missed a bunch of games this year. Mm-hmm. So I want to know exactly what the depth chart is coming in.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so let's wrap up with Utah versus question mark. It will be either Golden State or Memphis. We are recording this on Friday, so that game has yet to be played. Regardless of which team wins in that play-in game tonight, Mort, how do you think they need to attack Gobert and this Jazz defense?
Well, ironically, not attack Gobert. That's probably the way to win this, is just not to get the ball anywhere near the vicinity of Rudy Gobert defensively.
That is fair. So, I mean, for Golden State, I think it's a lot easier than Memphis, who has, you know, runs a lot through Valanciunas, whereas
yeah.
Golden State can go five out pretty easily.
Yeah.
Do you think, we won't get to predictions quite yet, but do you think one of those teams would have a better chance than the other of upsetting Utah?
Well, I'm going to break your rule there of not going to predictions. Okay. Because, yeah, I honestly think... let me just first clarify this. Donovan Mitchell.
Yep.
We don't really know what kind of shape he's going to be in when yes. this series starts.
Yeah. He says he's going to be ready for game one. But
yeah,
he's coming off an ankle injury that... Yeah, he's missed a couple of weeks at this point.
Yes, and so I realize that he's playing. That's great. So if we're getting a Donovan Mitchell like we know him to, then I don't think it really matters, because then I have the Jazz as my favorites in either potential series or potential opponent. But if Mitchell is severely hindered from a physical standpoint, can't really get a whole lot of lift on his jump shot, can't gather a whole lot of separation between him and his defender, for example, then I would go as far as saying if they match up against the Golden State Warriors, I would take the Warriors. And if they match up against the Memphis Grizzlies, they would probably still come out on top. And I say that loving the Grizzlies, but I just think, like you said, so much of their offense and so much of their volume goes through big guys. And guys who likes to attack the basket as well.
Right.
And like you can't turn Ja Morant into a 40% 3-point shooter on 10 attempts per game overnight. You just can't. Like, he's a guy who likes to attack the basket. Jonas Valanciunas is around the basket. Brandon Clark is around the basket. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Jaren Jackson Jr. is more of the outside, but at the same time, he also likes to come in and grab lobs and do all those things. Mm-hmm. With Gobert there, that's just not doable.
Yeah. Yeah. Memphis, math will catch up to them too. They're 24th in 3-point makes, 23rd in 3-point attempts this year. Utah has been bombing away all season from deep, among the league leaders in all three categories. They're first in makes, first in attempts, fourth in 3-point shooting percentage. So, yeah, I would not like Memphis's chances in this series. Because, as you said, Ja Morant, it's not just the offense is running through Valanciunas, but Ja Morant, a lot of what he does is around the basket as well, and that's going to be a lot more difficult with a 7-plus-foot Frenchman standing in the middle of the way.
I love how this podcast is going to be so outdated, because the game tips off in 50 minutes.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why we are hedging our bets and talking about both. So let's, I mean, who will go there first? Who do you think wins the play-in game?
I think it's Golden State.
Yeah, I do as well. I'm just not betting against Steph Curry and Draymond in another what is it effectively an elimination game.
Yeah. I just think he's too locked in right now, Steph.
Yeah.
I would be shocked. And look, if Memphis does like do come out on top, kudos to them, because that would have been an Herculean effort, I think.
Yeah. I completely agree there. So if Golden State does advance, how do the Jazz defend Stephen Curry?
They don't. And I'm not even saying that as a joke. I mean, sure, they try. They put their best perimeter guys on him, of course. But they accept that you can't really do a whole lot there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they do is key in more so on the rest of the players. Like, let's stop Andrew Wiggins from penetrating. Let's see if we can actually stop or prevent Draymond Green from getting the ball in the open court, because he's such a great passer when he dribbles up the court and like has this vision. So if we can keep the ball out of the hands of Draymond, we also just take away a major passing hub, for example. And if that means Curry is going to average 47, go nuts. That's fine. This is one of those things where you want to eat? Sure. Here's a buffet. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Go nuts. We're just going to make sure that we are aligned everywhere else. So if you can 10 threes per game on us, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is where Royce O'Neal will draw that assignment primarily, I would assume. Or, you'll have Mitchell and Mike Conley to throw as well.
Yeah.
But, tell Royce O'Neal, we don't care what you provide offensively. Just stand in the corner and space the floor. But we don't need a ton out of you. Just please stay glued to Stephen Curry as best you can. But yeah, I think that is the concern for the Warriors' perspective, is do they have enough supplementary firepower, especially with Kelly Oubre still sidelined?
Well, they do if they stick to Curry.
No, that's not supplementary.
Well, it is in a way, because if you key in on Curry and double team him,
then
you're suddenly playing, 4-on-3.
And Draymond is a savant picking those apart, but you still need those guys to knock down open shots.
Well, I mean, are we pretending like Jordan Poole can hit open shots? He's been really great. The way that he ended the season, I don't think that's no joke. I mean, let me just pull up some numbers here, because he was phenomenal over the past, 20 games. Okay, so 20 games, over the past 20 games, 14.5 points in just 22 minutes per game.
Yeah.
Almost 2.5 threes per game, 86 from the foul line. Like, this guy is becoming one of the most reliable offensive players in terms of role players on the Golden State Warriors. So there is a scoring component here. He's not that dangerous that you need to concern yourself with him to a tremendous extent, but you need to worry about him a little bit if you are playing 4-on-5. Like I said, if you'd like double team hard on Curry, then he's a guy who can make you pay.
Yeah, I mean, they have Juan Toscano-Anderson as well, Kent Bazemore, Michael Mulder, I don't think is going to play a ton of minutes. But, they have guys who can hit shots, but do any of those guys really strike fear into you? I think Utah's all right, cool. We will happily live with these guys chucking open shots. And even if they hit, even if some of those guys get hot and steal a game, I don't think Utah has any real fear of losing this series, unless it is Steph just going for 70.
Well, see, again, that's where you said it right before. Draymond is a savant with the ball in his hands when it comes to passing. And that's why I'm basically saying, if you glue yourself to Stephen Curry with two players, then I would always trust Draymond enough in that, what is that, four versus three scenario to make the right play, whether that's him going straight into the cup and finishing with a dunk, or if it's him throwing the ball out to the corner or finding a cutter, whatever you want. I trust him enough to be able to penalize Utah deeply for doing that. So that's why I kind of just think, just don't. Don't double Curry. Just single coverage all game long. That has to be your Bible going into that series. Just single coverage every single time.
Agreed. So what's your prediction for either Utah Warriors or Utah Memphis?
So, again, that comes down to Donovan Mitchell, because I do also think that you know, the Jazz needs to put up a lot of points. But working in their favor, which I also have to acknowledge, is that they've had plenty of games this year without some of their key guys, where they still put up like 120 points. Any given night, they have this ability because of the 3-point shot. When they get when that gets cooking, they can basically do whatever. This, however, is the playoffs. They're also going up against Draymond Green, who is a great defender who will switch on to virtually everyone. So I don't think Bojan Bogdanovic is going to get as easy shots. I don't think George Niang is going to get as many easy shots. I don't think Jordan Clarkson is going to come in and be a high-efficiency, high-volume offensive player every single game. So it really depends on the health of Donovan Mitchell. Can he come in and give you a reliable and efficient 22 to 25 points per game? Then I think this is a cakewalk for the Jazz, because then they have that final piece of the offensive puzzle that just puts them over the top. Is Donovan Mitchell severely limited physically? Does he go out and shoot 25 times to score 20 points? Then I wouldn't be shocked to see the Warriors take that series. Yeah. And I have them over Memphis regardless.
Yeah, I go Utah. Honestly, Utah probably sweeps Memphis. I think Utah takes the Warriors out in five.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So even with Mitchell limited?
I'm assuming he's going to be pretty close to full strength. But
oh, yeah. Well, if he's close to full strength, I have them very much as the winning team here.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, it's definitely something you have to hedge against just in case. All right, well, enjoy the first weekend of playoff basketball, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening in. We will be back throughout the playoffs. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, enjoy early evening your time, playoff basketball for a few opportunities.
Yeah, that is wonderful. So let me just, for the Europeans listening in case you weren't aware. So, and this is local Copenhagen time. We're an hour earlier than London time. So that's 8 p.m. Saturday Heat Bucks, followed at 10:30 p.m. Mavericks Clippers. So early game Saturday. Sunday, 7 p.m. Wizards Sixers, 9:30 p.m. Lakers Suns. I mean, it couldn't be better. So if you're a Euro, you're an NBA fan, and you don't tune in both nights, you're missing out. So league pass.
There we go.
Immediately. Yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy the weekend, Mort. We'll catch up soon.
Definitely, Brian. Take care, man.